This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 122. This episode was previously recorded. Can a comic collector of 20 plus years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Well, thank you, AnnouncerBot. Welcome to How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just as a reminder, we have a Facebook fan page. Just search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. You can go to the sfpodcastnetwork.com for the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or go to iTunes and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, where you can leave us a review.
And you can contact us through the website, Facebook, or email, sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Finally, you can call the voice line at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
SFP.
SFP. Well, this episode is being pre-recorded for the holiday weekend. We are going back to the whole DC 75th anniversary to delve into yet another major chunk of that history. And we're talking about the birth and death of the Silver Age. So the Silver Age can't begin until the Golden Age ends, and it ends with Frederick Wortham. Dr. Frederick Wortham wrote a book called Seduction of the Innocent in 1954, basically saying that comic books were horribly evil for kids.
And they were.
As new media comes up, there's always kind of a backlash of, oh, well, this is why kids are bad today, because of that, because of rock and roll, because of
video games.
Well, at the time, comic books were the boogeymen. To play devil's advocate on this, certainly there were some things coming out that were kind of, some of the EC stuff with injury to the eye panels and things like that were like, okay, maybe a bit much. But it ended up with Senate hearings and what was called the Comics Code Authority, which toned down comics to the point where kids weren't interested in them anymore. And by that point, superheroes had pretty much fallen off the map. The only characters who still had books, who were still being published at DC for as heroes, were Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. Everybody else was gone. And it was mostly, you know, detective books and cowboy books and mystery books and romance books, anything but superheroes.
So was it mostly adults reading them then?
I think cowboy stuff, probably more kids. They were trying to go more toward the adult market to some extent.
Okay.
You know, an adult loosely. I mean, romance books were more like, you know, for older girls.
Teen girls.
Yeah, exactly.
The Harlequin romance of the day.
Right. One of the big questions about the Silver Age is who actually starts it, as far as a character is concerned. Who is the first Silver Age character? And, of course, this is a DC-centric podcast, so we're going to concentrate on DC. I'll mention other publishers as we go on here. But you really want to look at characters who are not later referenced as Earth 2 characters. That is, you know, that they're not referenced being with the JSA or things like that.
Because then they would be Golden Age characters.
They would be Golden Age characters. Depending on who you talk to, some consider Captain Comet, a character from 1951, to be the first Earth 1 hero, hence Silver Age. And there's others that say Martian Manhunter, who's certainly a more important character in the DCU, from 1954, being the first character. But they're really introduction to the Silver Age more than the
a
major event.
That started.
The major event is Showcase Comics. So Showcase Comics was essentially TV pilots for new comic book characters, trying out a character. Because at the time, keep in mind that there were virtually no comic book dealers. It was all sold via newsstands and drugstores. And they were sold the same way that magazines were sold. And because of that, it was virtually impossible to start a new title when you knew it wasn't going to run very long. Because the magazine publishers and the newspaper distributors didn't want to deal with it. They wanted standard product that came out every month, and they didn't need to worry about it. Because of that, DC said, we want to try out new characters, but we have to have a regular ongoing title to do that. Hence, Showcase. Showcase number 4, by many considered to be the official announcement of the Silver Age. Showcase number 4, the first appearance of Barry Allen, the Silver Age Flash. This is a huge hit, and three major players at DC decide we're going to expand the concept of taking a hero that we've recreated from a Golden Age character. Because, of course, the Golden Age Flash, Jay Garrick, is the predecessor for Barry.
Right. So in those first three showcases then that they would have had, because this was showcase number 4, mm-hmm. were they not doing superheroes? Was it still more the romance?
No. Most of these are actually superheroes, or at least what you would consider in that area. It's just characters that didn't take off.
Okay.
Right. So these three players at DC Comics, Julia Schwartz, Gardner Fox, and Carmine Infantino, say, we're going to introduce other Golden Age characters as new versions of those characters. And in a showcase were the first appearances of the Silver Age Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, the Silver Age Atom, and the Silver Age Hawkman were all introduced. But also in the showcase, first appearances of Adam Strange, Rip Hunter, Challengers of the Unknown, Sea Devils, Metal Men, the Inferior Five, Creeper, and Hawk and Dove all come out from Showcase Comics. And Showcase ran from 1956 through 1970. And it later returned for a short period of time in 1977 through 78. And then there was a whole series called Showcase with a year after it, like 95 or something like that, that came out in the 90s.
And were they still doing the same thing then, introducing new characters? Or
in that case, Showcase was more doing taking established characters and just doing a run of that character more than introducing new characters.
So maybe somebody who didn't have a book or something.
Right, right. Barry Allen Flash becomes a charter member of the JLA, along with Martian Manhunter and the Hal Jordan Green Lantern. JLA becomes this huge hit. And depending on, again, who you talk to, prompts Marvel to do the Fantastic Four. And there's this apocryphal golf story, which apparently has been debunked, but it's a nice story, that the publishers of DC and Marvel are playing golf together. And the DC publisher's like, well, we're doing really great with the JLA. And the Marvel guy's thinking, okay, well, maybe we need to do something. It's probably more likely that both of them were separately playing golf with the newsstand distributor. And he was saying, hey, that JLA thing's doing really well.
Yeah.
We then reach Flash number 123. Now, you're saying, wow, how did he get to 123? They continued the story, or the numbering of Flash Comics from the Golden Age. So when they finished the last issue of Jay Garrick Flash, they just continued those numbering. So at Flash number 123 is one of the most significant issues of DC Comics ever, and I would guess probably in the top 10 in terms of major events. Flash of Two Worlds, 1961, the multiverse is created. Jay Garrick, the Golden Age Flash, returns into continuity, and he's, of course, quickly followed by the JSA, and so now we have the Golden Age heroes and the Silver Age concept now firmly in place, because now we have Earth 1 and Earth 2. And they, of course, are separated by a vibrational layer or something like that that they always explained as to why they could both coexist. Meanwhile, what's going on with the other players in the industry? Harvey Comics actually started the Silver Age period as a horror publisher. They were doing horror titles. And the Comics Code pushed them to drop that and get into kids' titles, which started Casper and Richie Rich and all of those types of characters. And Dell and Gold Key, the other major players, followed their lead to get into more kid-like characters and to get into superhero characters. And when the Batman TV series came out in the mid-60s, that had an enormous impact on the industry. It revitalized, to some extent, the industry, and it also made the publishers say, you know, we've got to get into this. If they hadn't already gotten into superheroes, they were going to do so. So Archie, Harvey, Gold Key, Dell all resumed or introduced new superheroes. One company, Charlton Comics, ended up having something that really had a huge impact later on DC, because DC ended up buying these characters in the 80s. And they bought these characters, all came out of Charlton Comics in the 60s, all being generated because of the Batman TV series and the interest in that. Captain Atom, Blue Beetle, Question, Peacemaker, Son of Vulcan, Judo Master, all came out of this Charlton Comics. And, of course, these characters, DC bought them initially to do what eventually became Watchmen. So they bought them with the intent to kind of recreate the characters, you know.
And have them in their own little universe.
In their own little universe.
But being the Watchmen.
But because it became so bizarre and adult-centered, they said, we don't want to waste these characters on that, which they thought was going to be a mistake to go that dark. And so Alan Moore was told, well, you can't use those characters. So he just ended up kind of making slightly altered versions of the characters, which became Watchmen. We also, in the Silver Age, have the Underground Comics. And this all came out of the 60s counterculture. These were black and white comics, for the most part, run off of copy machines, very small print runs. They were mostly parodies. There was a huge amount of adult themes. There was swearing. There was sex. And these,
definitely not with the Comics Code.
Yeah, this was absolutely not Comics Code Authority approved. And these were all sold in head shops, which in a way became the first comic book shops. And that's where you bought these things. And it was, oh, these, you know, these are evil books. So when does the Silver Age end? Well, there's a lot of points you can look at, but it really is right around 1970. The last 12-cent comics come out in 1969. Mort Weisinger retires as the Superman editor in 1970. Mort Weisinger being the creator of so much in the Superman lore in the 1950s and 60s. Jack Kirby leaves Marvel for DC also in 1970. We start to see the relevance in comics in the early 70s. The idea that we're going to take on real themes, and this is
social issues.
Social issues, and this is what you saw coming, like, for example, from the Green Lantern, Green Arrow title, and the hard traveling heroes, and Speedy as a junkie, and all of that. Now, you could also argue that Gwen Stacy's death in Marvel Comics, specifically in Spider-Man comics, in 1973 might be considered to be the end of the Silver Age, the end of innocence, as it were, and the move toward what is now referred to as the Bronze Age. And the Bronze Age pretty much runs through 1985. And at some point, we'll go back and talk about that.
At that point, the end of the Silver Age, is that when a lot of the comics started turning away from the Comics Code Authority again? Or,
well, you know, really, they were still all pretty much covered under Comics Code until really the end of the Bronze Age. If you look at titles actually going into the 90s even, it was hard to see because it was generally like this almost transparent thing. But if you look at most DC titles, there was still a CCA stamp on them.
Now, a lot of the Marvels still have them today.
Right, right. And there's still stuff with CCA stuff on it.
Yes.
But it's pretty much gone by the wayside. Okay, well, no who's on the cover this week because we are doing this in advance, so sorry about that.
We don't know who's going to be on the cover.
We don't know.
We just don't know.
Neither of us know.
Maybe it'll be better than last week's cover.
Yeah. So, want to remind you about that Facebook fan page. Search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. You can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com for the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs. Or you can go to iTunes and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. And please leave us a review.
You can contact us through the website, Facebook, or email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com.
There you go.
Or you can call our voice line at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9737. SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.